This is Turner Mining Live, where we give you a behind-the-scenes look at how we're innovating to change the game and grow a business in an ancient but still booming industry.
Hey, folks, welcome back. This is Keaton Turner, and we're hosting Turner Mining Live
for
a second time today.
Again.
To my right, I've got the guy that keeps me out of trouble. Or gets in trouble.
Oh, there it goes again. There it goes again.
So what are you drinking?
Coors Banquet, yet again.
And we are still not sponsored.
Still not sponsored. This one under the cap says golden since 1873.
That's a long time. I'm not drinking Coors Banquet. I had one earlier. I'm drinking a social from the tap. Still not sponsored.
We'll take their sponsorship. That'd be great. Yeah,
that'd be great. But we've got an awesome guest today. This guy is somebody that I've known for a long time. Happened to be rolling through town. You're actually the first non-employee guest we've had on in a long time.
At least two years. I was trying to think about...
I feel honored.
It might even be like...
Yeah, we used to do only non-employee guests, but then we thought, well, people want to hear from our people. So, yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, it's very exciting. Thank you.
This guy, before I tell you his name, this guy is somebody that I was texting Thomas last night when you said, hey, let's get dinner. And I'm like, I got a better idea. Let's do a podcast.
Yeah, sure.
Let's drink beer.
Like, well, you know, will it work? Will he fit? I'm like, dude, this guy, his personality, his background, his story, this could be perfect. So I don't want the edited version of Dave. I want the unedited, raw, unfiltered.
Yeah.
We've already had one or two beers back in the back. So, Dave Wilson, everybody. David Wilson, if we're going to be formal. Tell us who you are. What are you doing? Where have you been? Why are you even sitting here today? How'd you get here?
Sure. So my background is I'm originally from Iowa, and I started at John Deere in the Dubuque, Iowa factory in 2001. So here we are 20-plus years later, and I guess that's really all I know, aside from I can talk pretty intelligently about hot rods. But other than that, you know, the equipment business is really my thing. And I spent almost 14 years with John Deere Corporate and had a blessed life and traveled the world and got to do lots of really cool things. And Keaton and I's path crossed a number of years ago at a Con Expo event. I don't know if it was 08, I think, something like that. I think it was my first one. I was that guy doing the intro up on top of the box and the reveal and the countdown, the big show and things.
Oh, yeah, you were. I remember that.
Yeah.
I forgot all about that.
And if you remember what was funny, it was the first year I got approached by this or for that event by our Marcom group. And they said, well, you know, we think your personality could work for this. And I was like, okay, well, you think so?
You think so?
Hey, here we go. Dave.
Yeah, that's fine. All right, guys, come on. Right? And
you know, that's exactly what you sounded like.
Right. You know, let's hear noise. Thanks, let me take it. Anyway. So anyway, they said, well, I said, well, who am I going to be working with? You know, like one of my friends from work or something like that. They said, no, we're going to hire a professional actor to be up there with you and act like a dear person.
Oh, my God.
You guys will rehearse your lines and your script, if you will. But he doesn't know anything. He's just an actor. And that way there's less risk because he won't screw up. And I'm like, fine, I don't care, whatever. What we did the first year. And that was the Chatterbox.
That is wild. Were you guys unveiling the 460 or what was that?
No, the big reveal was the Chatterbox.
Oh, the Chatterbox.
The mobile recording studio. Thing, which I don't, that's probably in a barn somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think that took off.
So anyway, you know, Con Expo's every 3 years. So for the next, so I did it that first year and then I did it two more Con Expos.
Yeah.
So 3 and 6 years later. But the 2 years after that, I did it with one of my very best friends from work who was my cohort in crime, and that worked so much better because we had a rap with
you each other. Could
hammer. We were buddies, and we rehearsed our stuff in my living room for hours and hours. And the idea, and on the plane, and in the shower, and the bathroom, I would rehearse this till it was on autopilot, right? Because you're standing up there when you're revealing. We revealed the 460 and the 944, and of course, then the 944 came out 4 years after that.
But yeah, anyway, the real one.
Yep. Yeah, the real one. But that's kind of how Keaton and I's relationship started. And then a number of years ago, 8 years ago, I think I jumped off the John Deere corporate train and went over to a private John Deere dealer here in Indiana, a construction dealer. And, you know, that's where I reside now. And so I live in Indianapolis and travel amongst the state to our different locations and handle our parts and service operations. So a lot of bodies and moving pieces, but I happen to be in Bloomington this week because one of our service managers is on vacation. I'm happy that he's taking that time for himself. And
well, and you're being humble because you've been everywhere.
I was gonna say,
you know,
you're
everybody.
Dear corporate, yeah.
We've had some great times together, and like I said, his personality. I hope it all comes blossoming out on this because. Yeah. Great did personality.
You, did you ever touch it? Were you in Moline or where mm-hmm. were you? Okay. Yep. And then did you ever touch, were you always construction side or do you touch agriculture at all?
No.
Okay. Cause in a previous life I worked at Pioneer. And so I dealt with a lot of deer people on the ag side. So that's cool.
It's interesting. You know, when you spend enough years, on the deer train, which I say I lived a blessed life for a long time. I got to do lots of cool things that I would have never done and traveled all over the world and saw lots of really interesting stuff. And by the way, if you ever get the chance to go to India, you might want to pass. at least 10 years ago when I was in it. I'm not doing that again.
It's not on my list.
No. Yeah. But what's interesting is when you bleed yellow, construction yellow,
uh-huh.
it's very difficult to go over to the ag side,
yeah.
right?
Because that is green.
I don't speak that language. I don't identify with that side of the business. And, you know, if you spend more than 5 seconds around me, you know that I'm kind of an animated guy. I'm a type A, go, 1,000 miles an hour type of guy. And I have a very extreme sense of urgency, a very extreme sense of ownership. And my brain thinks in A to B, which is why I love drag racing, right? I'm a big race guy. Yeah. So I see the finish line and get out of the way because that's where I'm sprinting to. And in a big corporate environment, the ag world, God bless them, right, moves at a little bit different pace.
Yeah.
The construction world moves a little bit differently. And that's one thing I love about the dealer world is, you know, I always used to joke that the corporate world moves like a cruise ship docking at port. And the dealer world and the contractor world, we move like a jet ski.
Yeah. Right?
We're moving like
crazy. Be quick.
And that suits me. You know, I even sit here. I don't sit still very well, right? So, you know, I like to go fast. I like to get there. I like to go to A to B. And so that's kind of where how I landed here.
That is the cruise ship analogy. I used it. That's why I was like, oh my God.
The last podcast, we just talked about being quick. But I mean, as a contractor, we want to be nimble and quick. But we're very protective of who we bring on here. We've only done a couple handfuls of these, right? Sure. Maybe 20 podcasts in total. We get equipment people all the time, especially sales guys.
Yeah.
You're the only real one that it's because I love the heck out of you and your energy and what you've done. But I think your story and how you think about the industry. We were just talking back here. I wish I had some of it on already.
I know we should have recorded that for like the last half hour.
I know.
That was great stuff.
But we're going to get into it. I got notes taken. But, you know, your energy, the way you think about the industry, the problems, people struggle to communicate what they see and feel, right? Mm-hmm. They notice something, but they can't really like articulate why did that person do that thing. You're somebody that's no nonsense. It's black and white. You address the problem. You know, I remember back in the day, you got to come to Cupertino a couple times.
And had a great time out there.
The 460 trucks and a lot of fun. But I want to get into it because there's tons that I think people, especially younger people, can learn from you. You're not an old guy.
No, I'm 44.
So you've lived a lot of life, though.
Yeah.
Hopefully I look youthful in my age.
Absolutely. You do. Wings, yeah. So you came from the corporate world and you transitioned to a family business. I say family. It's a big family. It's an old company, Westside Tractor. Give me a little bit of a glimpse, because I transitioned from a family business, not into a corporate world, but
into your own business.
It's a different business. How did you make the switch from all that, like, you know, established structure and corporation and organization? Not that Westside's not, but
no,
it's totally different.
It's interesting you ask that because I would tell you it took the first 2 years was very challenging mentally. I tried to keep that, you know, keep my professional face on and be cool and, like, you know, be my normal self. But internally, I was really struggling with it's a different type of business, different type of people, different type of vibe, you know, and with, you know, the white collar environment versus blue collar environment. And I'm not saying one's better than worse than the other because they're not. It's, we have to be just real. It's a very different environment.
Yeah. Right.
And, by nature of the position, you also have to learn to be very mindful of your word choice, tone, and delivery. And so if I tell you, Keaton, that's a nice shirt, right? So the word choices there were perfectly acceptable.
Right. Yeah.
But my tone and delivery were horrible.
Yeah.
Right. It's no different than when you have a puppy sitting here and you go, "You're the dumbest little puppy ever."
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, those word choice wasn't good, but the tone and delivery was so good he didn't even know.
Yeah. Right?
And so I didn't have the self-awareness, I think, when I came to the dealer side to be mindful as I needed to be of the impact of my words by the nature of my position.
Right.
And so for where I learned this the hard way was I'm walking, I do lots of hot laps through the shop, right? And I'm not just a sit in the office type of guy. I mean, if you see me sitting here right now, I'm wearing Danner steel toe work boots, I'm wearing blue jeans. You know, I mean, I'm not the starched white shirt.
You don't look like your title. We'll put it that way.
And I do that on purpose, right? I mean, I guys know that I get out on my machine. I was laying underneath a D6 in the shop today. Okay, I get dirty. I'm not afraid to shake hands with a guy that's greasy and dirty. Uh-huh. Now they don't want to get me dirty, but I don't give them a chance to get away. But where I learned the hard way the first time was I was walking through a shop one day and a guy just in passing as we were talking, again, I'm still very new. And he happens to mention that, you know, there was a lifting strap or something that was kind of frayed. I'm like, oh yeah, we might want to look at getting that fixed. And what he heard was, "I'll have a new one for you tomorrow." But I didn't say that.
Yeah.
I thought we were just yucking it up like here, and all you have to look at that, why don't you go tell your manager? I don't know. That's what you tell, not me, right?
Yep.
6 months later, it got brought up that, well, nobody cares about safety around here because, you know, we didn't replace our lifting strap.
Mm.
Well, he also didn't go tell his manager,
right.
And I didn't. So, again, that shame on me. That's my fault. I take full ownership for that. I didn't understand at the time that I wasn't listening in a way that I needed to be listening.
Right. Mm.
And that's nobody's fault but my own, right? So now I'm much more attuned to not only my word choice, tone, and delivery, but how I'm listening to what I'm hearing. What are they really saying?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's something I wasn't used to thinking about in my starched white shirt, Gucci loafer days in the John Deere corporate world.
Right. Yep.
Right.
It's a different environment.
That's such a different environment. And I think you've seen people that struggle to make the opposite transition from the mom and pop to the corporate world.
Yeah.
And they get there and they're like, man, and we've had people, you know, we've had people come here from Kiewit, from big old companies, right? Other big companies that you'd recognize the names, and they are lost. They're like, well, where's the SOP? Where's the process? Where's the...
Yeah, we just go, dude. There's no process.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean?
We're going to shoot, we're aim later.
Right? Yeah, we were just talking back here. You know, a service manager that you're talking about, you know, a talented guy. We don't have the process. We want you to come here and help us build the process.
Right.
If you've learned it, one of the reasons we're hiring you is because you know the process.
Right.
Go do the process, but also document it
right. So
that others behind you can do it.
Yep.
It's a challenge.
It is. It's a very different environment when you shift to a totally different lane, right? And
one
of the things, too, that I love about the organization where I'm at now is that we focus so much on our culture and the people. And the other things will fall in place. And as we were chatting earlier, you know, the two things that the guys have heard is my battle cry that I preach all the time, which is healthy business, healthy team. If we don't have a healthy team, healthy business. Healthy team, healthy business. If we don't have a healthy team, we will never have a healthy business. And I don't mean healthy like sick from the flu. I mean healthy in mindset, right?
Yeah.
I have an expectation of an absolute absence of toxicity. So if you're going to be that guy, I don't care how good you are. I don't care how talented you are, Mr. Technician. You need to go someplace else because I will go without your skill sets before I let you taint my other good people. Because
yes.
I've worked too dang hard to build a team of healthy-minded people. I can work on their skill sets, right? I can teach you the things that you don't know.
Yeah.
I can teach you the systems, the processes, the diagnostics, the whatever. I can't teach you how to be a good person.
Yeah.
And if you're toxic on day one in your soul,
yeah.
I learned the hard way.
Yeah.
You will be that way till you're dead. I've failed and failed and failed till I'm blue in the face thinking I could, you know what, this guy's so good and we need him so bad. And I could tweak him. I could sand off the rough edges. The answer is no.
Yeah.
It's never gonna work.
I knew you'd love this, but I already heard this back here, and I was just like falling all over myself because I don't get to see you and talk to you that often.
It's never gonna work.
But you're somebody that's so in tune with that, and so my follow up was because I've learned these same. My biggest lessons are people lessons.
Yep.
The thing that screwed me the most in the last 6 years here is bringing in the wrong person, and especially the wrong person at the wrong time. But also not recognizing it soon enough. How do you recognize Like, because you've lived through this clearly, right? You can't sit here and speak with this kind of experience if you haven't lived through it a bunch of times. How do you recognize that?
Yeah, another thing that I've picked up on over the years by failing, okay? Another thing I'm very transparent on
scars.
Is my failures and my insecurities and the things that I've done wrong. And the guys that heard me say, look, I'm the first one to fall on my own sword, right? Whether they're mine, deservedly or not.
Right.
Right.
Gotta be.
The boss always has to fall on the sword, whether it's yours or not, right?
Yeah.
If I had a nickel for every sword I fall on that wasn't mine, I wouldn't have to be working, right?
Yeah. But
where I was going with that is, you know, when you sit down with someone for the first time, whether it's a parts person or a technician or whatever the position is, in that first 30 minutes, you kind of get a vibe, right? You kind of feel that. And I'm no doctor. I'm no psychiatrist, right? I'm an equipment guy. I'm a hot rod guy. But the one thing I've learned over the years is that there's something strange that goes on between your heart and your brain, that your body says, I have a vibe here about this person. And you know what? You're right.
Yeah.
The body and the brain are never wrong, right?
Yeah.
And so I've told myself, well, I got a vibe about this guy, but he's really good, and we really need this talent in whatever the position is or the department. So we're just going to go with it, and, you know, he's a little rough, but I bet I can sign the end. No. That is a recipe for a firing, or whether he gets kicked off the bus or he jumps off the bus on his own, either way, he's not going to stay there.
Yeah.
Right? So when you get that feeling, you know, if you get nothing, like an absence of feeling, then maybe that's okay. But if you get that, gosh, there's just something that I can't put my finger on, the answer is no, dude.
Regardless of the resume, regardless of his experience.
So here's a perfect example. We, at one of our locations, one of our newest locations here, that's probably been a year and a half ago, we're desperate to grow our talent team in our service department.
Right.
And I needed technicians, and I saw a resume come through. And this guy had worked at all of the other big three names in the state of Indiana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he had about a 24 to 30 month stint at each one, which makes me nervous right off the bat, because I'm not looking for a one night or a 1 year stand here. I'm looking for a rest of your career stand. I'm looking to get married and stay married for a long time with these people. I'm not looking for short term relationships here. And so I'm a little nervy about the resume, but I thought, well, yeah, maybe he's good. We'll give him a shot, right? So he comes in. And right away, I can tell, you know, when you're speaking to a technician, if they speak the language.
Yeah.
This guy clearly spoke the language. I mean, he was very intelligent. I could, no doubt of his skill sets. But right away, I could sense pride, arrogance, fathead. You know, this guy's going to be hard to manage.
Right.
I've hired people that I knew were going to be hard to manage. And guess what? Zero of them still work with
us. Yeah. They were hard to manage.
Yeah.
Because they were hard to manage. Right. So anyway, he leaves. And course, we all know each other in the industry, so I make a few phone calls, and the unanimous feedback was A+ skills.
Right.
He will, the customers love him, he fixes their stuff, no questions asked. The problem is if there's ever anything getting stirred up amongst the group, he's always that guy. So we didn't hire him. You know, that guy hounded me for 2 weeks as to how wrong I was and how big of mistakes I was, and the text messages I got about how much of an hole I was, because I'm not, you don't know what you're missing out on. And I'm like, dude, you're proving my point right here.
Yeah.
So when you get that vibe, you know, and this is a perfect example of A+ talent, F- core values, I will go without. And this is another thing, to my second battle cry I mentioned before, healthy team, healthy business is first and foremost. But second of all, you know, when you're short staffed and you're really hungry to, I need good people, we will go without before we hire the wrong person.
Yes.
We will go without. We will struggle. We'll work longer hours. We'll dig deeper.
Yeah.
You know, we're a little shy in a couple of places right now. And I've been working at home, but cranking out warranty claims. And I hate doing that stuff.
Yeah.
Right. But guess what? Somebody's got to do it. Right. And that's the mantra. I would rather go without and work harder with what we have and get the right people in the right seat on the bus with the right skill sets and core values, right? Because if you don't do that, you risk destroying the good vibe you have with all the other good people, because the good people eventually leave because the bad person wasn't addressed, right?
So
is so dead on. I actually want to ask like a quite different question, which is, I actually think there's a lot of people out there that are that guy, right? Or let's say have been that guy. And they actually,
the talented guy
who, you know, has done a bunch of 2 year stints, has probably blown up some relationships, et cetera, et cetera. And like, actually wants to change? Like, I'm curious how you think about, like, the guy that is looking for the hard right-hand turn, right? Like, he is going to go from where he has been and going to be committed to...
I think the list of people that fall into that category, quite frankly, is very small.
Sure.
Because the people who are toxic at their core are going to be like... Yep. They were like that long before they met me, and they're going to be that till they're dead, right? And at the funeral, they're going to talk about that being who they were. I think there is a subset of folks that maybe have been jaded by poor employees or employers.
Yes.
Case in point, we have a guy who's been with us for, I don't know, maybe under a year at one of our locations. And he tells me all the time how much he loves coming to work every day for the first time in his life. Yeah. And I don't know how old he is. He's, I don't know, probably mid-30s, right? He said he's never had a job where he liked coming to work. And he loves coming to Westside Tractor Sales. And that's not because of me or his manager or the people, you know, it's the whole thing. Yeah. It's the whole package, right? And, you know, every new employee carries an invisible backpack with them with a little bit of baggage in it. Right? And some people's bag is really heavy.
Yeah.
Some people's bag is pretty light. But everybody has it there.
Yeah.
And you can't see it.
Oh, this is golden. I mean, I think there's so many people that are listening to this laughing because they're like, dude, I know that guy or I've worked around that guy. Or they're like us, they're an employer who's like, dude, my best guy was my biggest just jerk that I couldn't. We've had so many talented
Terrell
people.
Owens. Like Terrell Owens, like wide receivers in the NFL.
Dennis Rodman. I mean, you could name there. It's, and it seems like it's always the really talented people that also have a lot of baggage. Yep. You know, not all the time, because there's talented people that don't. But one of the mistakes I've made, and again, you and I can share in our mistakes because I've made a million of them. And I love to just own them all, right? Because it's easier than
fall
to
all those swords all day long.
Thomas says, "Eat all excuses."
Eat all of them.
You know, for me, it's the really eye-opening part when I hear you talk. For me, looking at my mistakes is the amount of really good people that I've lost over the years because of that one or two bad people. Yeah.
Because what happens is the toxic guy or the probably a very high performer in terms of his work quality and skill sets, but he's that guy. He's that toxic guy or gal. Right? That
women are exempt either.
I mean, we got toxic men and women. But what happens is the good people on the team then go to their first next in line supervisor, and it doesn't get addressed, and then they go to the next manager, and that it doesn't get addressed. Eventually, they're looking at the boss or the owner, or whoever, and when it doesn't get addressed, they quietly start gathering the other good people. And they start looking, and then one day there's a mass exodus, and you're left with the one toxic guy that you don't really want, and the good people leave. And trust, I've been on the brink of that a number of times, and that's my own fault, and management fail 101, and I've drank enough of that Kool-Aid to know it doesn't taste good, okay? But thankfully, we didn't fall off the cliff, right? But I've been so dangerously, scarily close to that from my own failures of not addressing those toxic people soon enough that the good people are ready to, you know, to jump ship, and jump off the bus. And the only people left are the ones I don't want. When you've gotten that close to it and your compensation is tied to the performance of that operation, you realize real quick, okay, I don't get to enjoy the luxury of putting my head in the sand and not addressing a toxic situation.
Yeah.
It's my obligation as the leader to handle those people. And those conversations I don't really have difficult conversations anymore, but because they're not hard anymore.
Right.
But when you're dealing with people's emotions, that's a very real thing. Right. But the good people need to be the priority and get the bad ones off the bus.
But you don't know. I mean, it's funny to hear you say all this. You don't know how to deal with that until you've dealt with it a couple times, right? Like there was more. There was a time, and this was one of the worst times in my young leadership career, where it was about a year and a half ago. I'll never forget it. We lost about 40 people, like literally overnight. Like I think in
that's brutal.
I think in 3 or 4 days, and we had brought some new people on. We were making changes, right? Processes, rules, trying to grow up. Some of it was really good and had good intentions, but was communicated the wrong way, was delivered the wrong way, rolled out the wrong way, not the culture that we were trying to build. And I mean, we lost some really solid, I think it was close to 40 people in a matter of days.
And you, and it's super interesting how you talked about getting like close to that edge. What amazes, what it's obviously sad that we lost that group of people. What amazes me are the people that stuck through it and then rebuilt on the other side of that. I'm like,
yeah, they stayed here. They stayed committed.
Thank God for those people. Like, it's just
when
amazing.
When you have that situation, again, having gone through it as well, like you guys have, when you come through those situations, everybody in the building learns from it, right? Whether you're an individual contributor or a first line manager or a higher level manager or whatever your role is, everybody learns from it because everybody feels the pain no matter what your role is. And everybody stays awake at night thinking about that, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody goes home and lays in bed at night thinking about different things, but the leaders in the organization think about the people. And I tell our folks all the time when the subject comes up that, you know, I have never lost a wink of sleep worrying about parts dollars, service dollars, the business, the trucks, the industry, and quite frankly, no offense, but not even the customers.
Yeah. Right?
Because customer problems can be fixed immediately with bigger buckets of money.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to dig into that bucket, but if I need to solve a customer problem, I can solve it by digging deeper in the money bank. It's to get the money can into the problem solved, to make an invoice go away, problem solved. I can't fix people problems with money.
Yes.
And those are the things that you stay awake at night going, did I do right by my men and women in the branch today? Did I demonstrate leadership? Did I demonstrate humility? Did I demonstrate empathy in doing all the things that I need to show that I'm there for them? I'm not there for the company. I'm not there for the money. I'm not there for anything other than to make sure that I'm there to serve them through servant leadership and be the best version of myself I can be for them.
Yeah.
And be obscenely self-aware of my word choice, tone, and delivery.
Yeah.
And brother, that is a challenge.
Preach. Okay? Dude,
that is very hard.
I say all the time, my biggest problems are people problems, but the only way we solve people problems are people.
Yep.
Like, and it's good people, right? And then the funny thing is, and Thomas, to your point, you're like, yeah, the people that stayed. Yeah, there's 40 that left. There's 250 or whatever that stayed. What, you know, how did those people
the team stay? Comes back stronger.
Well, it's funny, you know, oftentimes who comes on their back
own. Yeah.
About a year and a half later?
Yeah.
I don't know that all 40, but I bet you at least 30 of them. And you know names, Thomas.
I know these names.
Yeah. They, a year and a half later, right? You win a project, you get some more gear, water under the bridge. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, wow, the company did grow up a little bit. Well, I went back in.
And more changes happened.
Yeah, more changes happened.
And then they're like, ooh, I can't believe I left.
How have you dealt with that?
So I have dealt with that a number of times. So as we talked about when we started this, right? I mean, I've been around, you know, John Deere and John Deere dealers my whole life, right? 20 plus years. And I've seen lots of really great and mediocre John Deere dealers, as well as Cat, Komatsu, Volvo, all the other brands. And they all run their own unique way, right? But the one thing I can tell you with confidence, and I'm not saying this just because of where I work or the brand that we represent. I'm saying this because I've seen it in all different walks of dealerships. There's not a better organization to be a part of than this one in the state of Indiana. So when you have folks who think, you know,
that's a big claim.
It is. And you know what? I'll argue it all day long with very high confidence. And here's why. Here's why I'll tell you that. I've hired people from every dealership, truck dealership, equipment dealership, lawnmower dealership in the state of Indiana. And there's been some that have left, and they get this the way the industry is with a shortage of talent. And people get googly eye because they're going to make $5 more an hour, and they think that's the greatest thing. I tell them, look, I'm telling you right now, dude, the grass is not greener over there, okay? And of the majority of, not all of them, and some of them that leave need to leave, right? Yep. But there's a good portion of them that eventually will come back and say, you know what, it's been 6 months or a year or 2 years, whatever, and I realize, you know what, I have these golden handcuffs on now, but I'm miserable, and I miss how it felt to go to work.
Does Dave Wilson bring them back?
I work real hard to do it.
Yeah.
I'm working on one right now, so hopefully next week we'll get that squared away.
Think about it, but it was kind of actually buried in the question I asked. Like, if someone does really act like their eyes finally get opened up and they really actually see it and they are going to make the change and they do understand, like, I actually do want that person. I think they're few in number. And I
come back with different context for sure.
Oh, that's way right. different context.
And that person who went and checked out the grass on the other side of the fence and realized it wasn't any better. And yeah, so maybe they were making a buck or two more an hour, but they're miserable every day.
Yep.
And they have the mental acuity and maturity, right, to figure that out. When they do come back, one, you never argue over money.
No.
And quite frankly, I'm happy to pay them well. Okay. This isn't a money issue. I'm happy to pay you. That's not an issue. It's they understand that, oh, wow, that was a really great culture. And I didn't hate going there.
Yep.
And I didn't leave there because I hated going there. I left there because I thought I was going to get more money over there. And yep. I want to be like, dude, did you even give me a chance to give you more? Because I probably would have, but whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, the thing that I find coming back to, and I bring this up in interviews as well as people conversations, is, you know, we all get up, unless you own the company, if you're working for someone else, we all get up and we go to work because we need a paycheck. But I believe that people stay working where they are is for all the things that don't have anything to do with money, right?
Yep.
I feel respected, appreciated. I feel loved. I feel like I'm part of the family. I feel like we're all pulling the rope in the same direction. And the people on the bus with me are people that I don't dislike and I don't hate being here.
Yep.
And when everybody on the bus has those embraces, those same core values, and they have a similar mindset, then without trying, the experience for the customer is a positive one without even trying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
We tried a thing a few years back where we were trying to recognize when we saw people doing what we thought were like wow moments and positive things, and trying to recognize like, hey, you know, Keaton, you did a really great job the other day when you did ABC thing.
Yep.
I was amazed at the backlash from employees, because their observation was, I wasn't going above and beyond.
Right.
That's just what I do. Hmm. That really hit me, right? That's when you know you have a bus full of good people.
Yeah.
And you know what? I didn't ask them to do that. Yeah. I didn't ask them to go above and beyond. They were just doing it on their own. And when you have people that think like that, and now picture a whole building full of people that do that, from accounting to payroll to the yard to parts to service to whatever, to the manager, whoever. Everybody thinks like that in the building. There's no silos. There's no animosity. There's no toxicity amongst the people. The customers feel it without you trying.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So my expectation is that when anybody leaves an interaction with us, they leave the parking lot in their truck and they find themselves going, you know, gosh, I can't put my finger on it, but gosh, every time I go there, it just feels good. Right.
Yeah.
You know, if we're honest with ourselves, as proud of as I am of our product line, if we're honest with ourselves, if a customer is considering a premium grade product, right, of all the big brands, right, at the end of the day, it's all pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. We take dirt from here and we put it over there.
Yeah.
That's all it does, right?
Yep.
So why would someone want to go to this dealer versus that dealer? And my opinion is because of how it feels you do it.
Oh, totally agree.
It's not about the money. It's not about the dozer. It's not about the truck. Agree. It's not about the parts pricing. It's not about the parts availability, although all those things are important.
Yeah.
The ultimate decision maker is how it feels to interact with that organization.
Yeah.
And when you have good people that aren't trying to make you feel good, it just happens without effort.
Yep.
That's when you're winning.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I've literally bought tractors from one dealer instead of another, just based on feel alone, just based on conversations, relationships. I like talking to this guy. I don't like talking to that guy.
Yep.
I mean, I've said in the past, I don't say it much anymore, but they're all spoons and forks to me. They pick stuff up, they haul it, and they dump it, right? It's not
much. Take it from A to B.
I don't care if the spoon's blue, green, like it's a spoon. It's a fork. It does a thing. What I do care about is people like you. If you can sit down here and have the cultural impact that I think somebody like a Dave Wilson has on an organization.
Well, thank you.
Like, dude, that's the people I want to, I love it. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's what makes me feel good. I've said the same thing about like Andy Frisella, and you know, I think it's why the UFC is such a wild success. If Dana White was not leading the UFC organization, if people didn't buy into Dana White, UFC might still be successful. It's a sport, whatever. But people are buying into how Dana White acts, makes them feel, entertains them.
And then you were getting at this, Dave, in your comment, what it becomes magnetic.
That's right.
And so now Dana White gets a Joe Rogan. right? Joe Rogan could go call any fighting league, like, right? But he wants to be affiliated with this one because he likes Dana. Yep. He likes what the organization stands for all the way to the top. He probably likes how it's built. He probably has had good experiences with a lot of the folks in that organization. Like, it's magnetic. And and when you can capture that, you have to fight and hold on to it.
And you know, the other thing, too, is when the reputation for your organization gets to be in the marketplace, that's a good place to be. Certainly, you know, ultimately, hopefully it drives machine sales and service sales. Sure. But, you know, to be quite honest, I care less about that than I do more about the employee attraction and retention.
Yeah.
Right. When people look at you and go, man, I heard a friend of mine who knows a guy who knows a guy who works there, and he said it's a really great place to be. And gosh, I kind of think maybe I want to go there. Right. And that's so important because it's so hard to find talent these days. In the old days of where you used to post you had a position and you post it online and you get 25 people to apply and you get it to a short stack of two, you interview and boom, you hire somebody, right?
Yep.
Well, now that's not the way it works, right? And you're attracting people through social media or whatever the other avenues are. And we need to create a brand for ourselves so that the person who is otherwise perfectly happy where they work sees our culture and what it, air fingers quote, feels like to be there, that they go, you know, I think I want to take a sip of that Kool-Aid. Yeah, I want to get on that
bus. It's
Kool-Aid,
man.
That sounds awesome to
me. It's Kool-Aid. You know? And it's so wild because, you know, and certain brands have done a really good job of this. I mean, I think it's one of the things that Kat had going so well for them for so long. If I drive around and see people wearing Westside Tractor hats that don't work for Westside Tractor, they're just pumped to rep the brand. Oh. Like, dude, to me, that makes me think, okay, everybody's wearing Westside. Like, I need to buy Westside, right? Yeah. I want the same thing for us. I want everyone wearing a TMG hat. I want everyone repping our brand. And I truly think, and it's why we did this podcast.
I need to leave here with one of those.
We got a ton. We'll hook you up.
This is my closet, right?
It's why we did the podcast, to talk to our people. Because if our own employees are so bought in, dude, the sales, the customers, all that will come.
Yeah.
It will take care of itself. If our employees are happy, they can hear from us. They know where the company's going. They hear the vision. They hear the values. They experience some of this culture, the drip.
Yep. Like,
they're going to take care of the customer.
Magnetic.
And then when the employee group, you know, toxic people only spread toxicity, right? And positive people only spread positivity, right? You know, winners focus on winners and losers focus on winners right?
So true.
You know, winners focus on winning and doing better, and losers just focus on why am I not winning, right? So, you know, the good people on the bus, all they're going to do is talk about the positive things that they have at work and what they love about it, and they tell all their friends, and they're sitting at the tavern or the restaurant or the family gathering or whatever, and you know, all of a sudden, here you are wearing your company swag at Thanksgiving dinner, right? Yeah. You're the only one in the room wearing something that's branded for the company, right? Yeah. And you're like, well, I'll go through my closet. Well, 90% of the stuff I have is all branded. Well, you know, why is that, right? I mean, I have to go buy clothes that are not branded and go out places, right? Because everything I have has a brand on it. But you think about why that is, right? I mean, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And makes you feel good.
And employees that have drank the Kool-Aid and are on the bus with you, will do the same thing, right? And then they tell their friends at the family gathering or the neighborhood picnic or whatever, and all of a sudden, you know, my view is if I can talk to as many people as I can about our industry, right? And if you talk to, like, I went to Ivy Tech here a couple weeks ago, and they have a deal where they brought in hundreds of high school kids, and they had these rotations, and I did a 25-minute little rotation about or presentation about our industry and our trade. And of course I'm selfishly recruiting, but I made it less about our company, more about just the industry, right? Exposure to the construction equipment industry and that there's lots of careers there and so forth. And I wasn't really trying to promote our brand, but I'm mostly promoting the industry, but you know, somebody wants to
plug. Shameless plug.
Sure.
But you know, the idea there is I'm trying to get the brand out there so that people go, maybe I should try that, right? And then these kids go home, and yes, I'm wanting to recruit technicians, and I'm trying to recruit that kid, but maybe that kid says, man, there was this guy talking about it, and the dad goes, well, I'm kind of looking for a parts job. Okay, great. Send dad in, right? Yep. You know, I'm open for all that stuff.
No, and it's actually interesting. I think what you're also pointing out is how much what you're doing that is industry focused, and I actually agree, it truly is like I'm trying to help this macro issue.
Sure.
How much positive ripples come back from that, but you're the one who's investing that extra effort to make it happen. That's my thing. It's like, because, you know, you get asked, oh, can you come to so-and-so conference and talk about whatever? And it's like, oh, are we going to do it? Are we going to do it again? Stuff, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Are
I
we
going to do it? Enough time. Yeah.
And we're like, yes. And people are like, why are you spending time doing that? There's no one in this room that's going to work for Turner. I don't care. Because I know that someone will tell that story, that someone will do that thing, that it only your positive people create positive results and talk that's about positive things. Like it is, it is so spot on.
Well, and I think brand impact is, you know, if you've got a good brand to stand behind and you feel good about it and you want to preach it to other people, like when you talk about Westside, I believe you. When I hear other dealers, and this is no knock on anybody. We deal with dealers all over the country.
Sure.
Good, bad, and ugly. And I won't name who the ugly ones are. When some of those folks talk, I know it's like they've got talking points that they've been taught how to say what my dealership does and what the Here's owners my template. Care. Yeah. Like when you talk about it and you're like, oh, yeah, dude, it's a bold claim. I don't care. We're better than anyone in the state of Indiana. Like, I believe it.
Yeah. And I'll say that to anybody all day long, and I don't need to wave the flag around town. Yeah. I'll say, look, the proof is in the pudding.
Right.
We do what we say. And again,
you have Tanner working for you. So
he's a great dude. But again, my intention wasn't to talk all about our brand and stuff today, but rather than more so just the industry and the business. But, you know, I really feel that it's really easy when you have a bus full of great people.
Yeah.
We have an ownership family that supports and embraces and encourages us to embrace all of our core values and do. The guys probably get tired of me saying all the time that, you know, what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong.
Yeah.
And we will always do the right thing for our customers and our people. Notice I said our people too.
Uh-huh.
Not because some manager is making us do it, but because that's what we would do when nobody's watching. Exactly. And if everybody on the bus thinks that way and believes in that, then organically the positive things just happen. Do we stumble? Do we fall down? Do we make mistakes? Sure, every day. Everybody does that, right? But it's about how you get back up. And if you have the mindset of we are always going to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Is it right?
Yeah.
And if you do the right thing, then you don't have to. It's like if you always tell the truth, you have to worry if you're lying or not, right?
Yeah.
And it's a very simple recipe. But, you know, I don't see that consistently across the marketplace.
Yeah, I think
and I think that's a big differentiator.
And I think sometimes what you'll hear instead is corporate speak or talking points that try to put on a veil of perfection. I actually like talking to folks who are like, no, we are striving for this. And by the way, I know we're going to fall a whole bunch on the way. That's when people are communicating in that way, it's way more authentic because nothing is perfect. Like, nothing is perfect.
To bear all of our embarrassing sins here and there, right? So we went and did a job today, and part of that job, you know, the PM and some other diagnostic repairs was to, very simply, put on a serpentine belt. Mm. Serpentine belt was bad in this machine. Very simple, right? Multiple segments on the work order. One of the segments was, very simply, put on a serpentine belt.
Yep.
Easy job.
Yep.
Well, we did everything except put the serpentine belt on. I don't know why.
Did it not have a belt, or was the belt just bad?
No, it was there, but it needs to be replaced. Okay. It's going to fail at some point very soon, right?
Yeah.
So thankfully, the customer's out of town till Monday, right? So nobody knows the difference.
Right.
Just we know. And so I don't really want to send them. This is a little bit of a drive to get to this tractor. I'm a little irritated we have to go back in the first place. So I get a little creative and figure out we have another store who has a technician from a different location who happens to live close to the area. Okay, well then tomorrow let's have that guy clock on our work order from a different store. Let's transfer the part in the system to clock, you know, all of the financials out. He can go in the morning right from his house. We'll get it fixed, get it put on. Not a bunch of additional expense. Of course, we eat that, right? I'm not charging the customer for that second trip because that's what's right.
Right.
Right. What's right is right. What's wrong is wrong. So I'm not going to charge him for that. That's our time. But when the customer comes back from a vacation on Monday, the machine's going to be good to go. Right. He won't even know that we screwed up and we stepped on a rake and it, you know, yeah. my nose is bleeding a little bit, but you know what? I don't like having to spend the extra $500 to fix my mistake, but by God, we're going to do it and it's done. And tomorrow morning it'll be handled. Nobody's the wiser.
Yeah.
Right. So when I talk to that customer next week and I tell him his job's complete, am I going to mention that? No. Now, if he asks me, I'll be honest with him and transparent, but there's no need to bring it up. We fell down, we fixed it, we moved on.
Yeah.
But that's a very minor example, right? But a lot of our really positive relationships we have with some of our bigger operations, many of them started with a product support situation. And because the way we handled the product support side of things, it turned into a positive product support situation, which then ultimately turned into machine sales. Right. And so, of course, I want the betterment of our organization and I want market share, machine sales and so forth. But, you know, I'm tasked with doing right by our customers on the product support side of things. And it's amazing the things that you know, you've walked into so many conversations thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be a mess. It's a nightmare. And you sit down and we sit at a table just like we are right now and you leave there and everybody's elated. And that's the simple recipe, right? And well, why did that happen? Why did we get there? Well, we were honest. We were transparent. We were sincere. We meant what we said. We admitted our mistakes. We did the right thing. We agreed on a plan. And I love using the groundwork of saying, look, my expectation when we leave this conversation is that, you know, I can put my head on my pillow and you can put your head on your pillow tonight and admit to ourselves that, you know what, that situation maybe was a little painful, but everybody came at a table. Everybody did what was right. And you know what? I feel really good about that.
Yeah,
and when we can have that when you leave a product support situation, then everybody's winning. And ultimately, that turns into more product support opportunities and more machine sales. But again, why did that situation go the way it did? It has nothing to do with the tractor, nothing to do with the parts, nothing to do even with the dang bill.
Yeah. Mm.
It had to do with the conversation with the people.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, people are everything. I've said before, if we took all of our people, especially all the people on staff, but if we just took all of our people and we weren't mining, but we decided to go make whatever, right? There was one point back in the day I said I could sell tampons, right? Tomorrow we're a tampon company. All these same people.
I'd like to see you with that logo on your shirt.
Yeah. Dude, I think we'd kill it. With this group of people, there's of course there'd be a learning curve. We'd have to do some R&D and whatever, but I'm not going to go there.
That's interesting R&D.
We would kill it because of the group of people. It's not that, you know, this group of people is just so amazing at mining. It's just such an amazing group of people.
Yeah.
And I think you could take the Westside Tractor logo off of your people and put some other logo on there, Volvo, Sandvik, whatever.
Yep.
If you've got a good group of people, I think it works.
Yeah.
You know, the product, sure, it's got to be good. It's got to haul dirt just like the other products. The competitors haul dirt just like we haul dirt. If we've got better people, I think we do it better than the competitors.
Yep. I think it, you know, at the end of the day, it always comes down to what I mentioned before about how it feels to do the business, right? I mean, if you walk into a fast food place or a gas station, you walk in and you order a soda or your gas station, you get a soda, a slice of pizza, whatever, and you give them the money, they give you the product, you walk outside. And if somebody walked up to you in the parking lot and said, what was the hair color of the person that just served you that soda? I know I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah.
I'm not engaged in that transaction. It's a very A to B transaction. There's no emotional connection. In our business, even if someone's just coming to the counter to buy that serpentine belt, they need to leave there with an emotional connection that it felt good to do that. And the only way to do that is with the right people.
Mm. Yep. Yeah. So true, man. Yep. So good. So we're 50 minutes in. What I got to ask, like, what's the number one challenge for Dave Wilson for the business that you're growing?
Sure.
This is business. This is not personal challenges. Okay. The fact that you switch Mustangs and you've got a cylinder dead or whatever. What is your number one challenge as you think about, you know, the next phase of your career and what you're trying to build and what you're doing today? I mean, the industry's got a million different things we could go fix and focus on. What's the one that you deal with? I mean, we've talked about people. Is that it?
You know, I think, you know, selfishly for me, I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm not going to do this for 20 more years, right? God willing. I love this industry. I love what I do. I love playing with big equipment and so forth. But, you know, the reality is 98% of my my world is people, right? It's not iron, it's not tractors. It's very much a people leadership and stewardship and servant leadership type of business. And with this big of a group and big of operation, you know, one of my things that I do think about at night when I'm awake at night is who's going to backfill me and continue the mission, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like mm-hmm. I've been 8 years here in this role and I love what I'm doing. And the reality is I'm not an old guy, but I'm not a young guy. And at some point, somebody is going to have to do this, and or I should say, get the privilege of doing this. Is right. How I look at it. I mean, right. I love this operation. I love what we're doing here, and I almost never go home feeling like, oh, I hate my job or I hate what I'm doing. You know, or, does everybody have frustration? Sure, but you know, I look at, wow, what a treat get to serve our people the way we do, and what a treat that we get to serve our customers and help them be successful and build businesses and hospitals and schools and highways and things that make the world go round. And what a treat that is. And we've got some really great, you know, younger up and comers that I'm cautiously optimistic about, which is exciting. I think there's a great future there for them. But we're not there yet.
Yeah. Right?
And so right. I do think about, in terms of, to answer your question specifically, what are the challenges? I think that's one of, am I or we as a leadership team, but again, specifically me in terms of extreme ownership, what am I doing to, you know, prepare that generation or the next person or people to take over what I'm doing in a way that they can do it better than me.
Yeah. Right?
And, you know, I try every day to be the best version of me I can be for our folks and our customers and our team. But then I'm only one man, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to do as much as I can to make sure that someday, whether that's however many more years it is from now, where somebody else I can say, okay, look, we're, you know, whatever, 7, 8, 9, 10 years from now, I'm ready to say, you know what, we're at the 2-year mark.
Yeah. Right.
Let's start the transition plan now. And I say that because I want to make sure that the healthy teams and the resulting healthy businesses that we spent so much time and effort and emotional investment building can endure.
Yeah.
And first and foremost, for the employees,
right,
which then turns into that positive experience for the customers, which turns into then business results for the company.
Yeah.
Right? But that's the tertiary level, right?
Yeah.
It's the people, the experience, the customers, and then the business comes, right? Healthy team, healthy business, right? So that's where my head is at, really, is you know, what are the, am I being the best version of me I can be now? Am I being that leader, that servant leader, to do everything I can for my people to be there for them, say, no, I love them and care about them and bring in that next whoever, whatever team or this person or team or people or whoever
right.
to continue the mission.
Yeah, well, it's so funny because so many people don't realize you don't get to move up no matter what level you're at. If you're entry level or you're senior level, you don't get to move up until you've replaced yourself.
That's right. Yeah.
And most people don't even think about replacing themselves because it's hard to do. I mean, we've had a couple false starts here where I try to replace myself with somebody. You know, I was a project manager when we started this because it was one project and I was managing it. So by default, I'm a project manager.
Yep.
Well, if you replace yourself with another project manager, hopefully that person does it as well or better than you did it.
Yep.
Ideally or better. If you replace that person with someone that does it worse than you, guess what? You're still a project manager. You now just have another layer
of work to do.
Of work to do right. and another person to manage. And if Nobody you do that at that. Scale... Yeah. You yep. are managing a ton. And so I've learned this lesson the hard way, and I've seen so many other people in our business learn it. Like, you've got to always be one or two steps ahead and thinking about replacing yourself. And is that person equipped? Are they trained? Do they have the same culture and values?
And you like, know, when you're a type A personality, like I think the three of us are here in this room, I always try and remind myself of the old management rule 101 is do I want it done? Or do I want it done my way, right?
Yeah.
So I can already foresee for this project that I've assigned these folks, you know, they're going to do it one of two or three ways, and one of those two or three ways is not my way.
Right.
Can I live with that? And if I can, I need to shut my mouth and let them be them. That's why they're there. That's why I'm entrusting them. And brother, that is hard.
It's so hard.
Because I do want it done my way. because I know my way is right and my way is better. Of course, in my head,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking,
yeah.
Right? But you know what? Their way is perfectly acceptable,
yeah,
as long as it is.
Yeah.
And if I can get my head around that fact, then you, the better leader says, you know what? I love that idea.
Right.
You
yeah.
go and do that.
Yeah. Did you ever struggle with micromanaging people? Like,
yes.
I mean, you're high energy, right? And you're yes. knowledgeable. You've got a good experience. Like, you seem like the type of guy, like me, I struggle with micromanaging, right?
Yeah, it's very easy for me to default to that and to slide into that realm. Mm-hmm. I have to be very conscious to not do that because it's very easy when someone brings you into something to just say, because
yeah.
I know how to do it. Say, yep. So let me do this.
Yeah, I got it.
And I can handle it myself in 5 minutes, or I can teach you and it takes me 2 hours.
Yeah.
The lazy, easy way is to just do it yourself. Do it now when it's done. The problem is that it's done today.
Yeah.
But it's never done tomorrow or into the future.
Yeah. Wow.
And I'm as guilty of that as anybody. So that is definitely a leadership fail on my part in many times. But I try and be very self-aware yeah. of that.
Well, and part of that's like the dark side of extreme ownership, right? Like yep. when you, I always talk about like your greatest strength is your greatest weakness. Like they go hand in hand. And when you know I am going to take accountability for whatever happens in this situation.
Yep.
The dark side of that is, well, I can help this situation, right? Like I can micromanage it so that the result is what I
because
think
I can
it's
make it be what it needs to be.
Exactly.
That's right. And it's very challenging too to let people go down a path that maybe you think they probably shouldn't, but you know if you don't let them, they're not going to learn.
Yeah.
And I had a very stark revelation of this in my time where I'm at now. I wanted to make a people transition that I was a little nervous about, but I thought, I think I can will this to work. You notice the
word? Yeah.
Notice the sketchy word there?
Uh-huh. Will.
Can will this to work, right? And, of course, we put this person in place, and a year later it didn't work, and we had to unfortunately exit that person off the bus. And I was really bummed about that because that was my fault. Right. I mean, I put that person in that position, and ultimately I was the one that had to escort them off the bus because they were now at a place where they couldn't be successful. And that was my fault for putting them in that spot. After the fact, I was talking about that with one of my peers in the leadership group. And I said, well, why didn't you tell me? Because the conversation, I knew that wasn't going to work.
Yep.
I said, well, why didn't you say something? Why didn't you tell me that? Why didn't you stop me? I'll never forget. He said, well, what would you have said if I would have told you that at the time? Would you have liked that? I said, no, I'd have been pissed as hell. I said, who are you to tell me what to do? I'm the freaking boss here. What are you going to tell me what to do with my people? He said, exactly.
Oh, wow.
You needed to learn it on your own.
Yeah.
And I feel bad that that happened, but he wasn't wrong.
Right.
And I've never forgotten that because obviously here we are talking about now, but that's very impactful. And I do think about that, about whether it's no matter the position, above me or below me or next to me, whatever, you know, at some point you gotta let the people be the people.
Yeah.
And if you've got the right people on the bus, you gotta trust that.
Yeah.
They're gonna
People don't learn from you telling them. People learn from doing it, figuring out if it worked or not. If it didn't work, the lesson never gets forgotten. I made the same mistake. I've brought more than several people on. At this point, it's starting to get a little bit disgusting, but I'm young, I'm learning, right? No. You bring people on, you think it's gonna be perfect. And I've learned so many leadership lessons on accountability and personality and culture. Yep. And, you know, you figure it out. But guess what? I don't repeat those. Or hopefully don't repeat those.
Try and do it less frequently.
Yeah, yeah, less frequently.
For sure, less frequently. Yeah. And also, like, again, I think this, like, the fallacy of perfection. Like, it's like, guys, like, I don't care if I've learned the lesson 3 times. I may still make the mistake again.
Yep. Yeah.
It doesn't mean that we can't recover from it and the right people on the bus and all these things aren't going to swim to make up for, you know, even in some senses, my error. But I think as long as there is at least some awareness and reflection around what was the root that caused that thing to go wrong, like that's where the real value lies. And like as long as the organization is doing that and you as a leader are doing that individually, you're going to make progress.
Yeah.
So I always end with the question.
Sure, go ahead.
If you could leave Yeah. You know, our audience is our people, right? But there's more than just our people to listen to this. If you could give any words of advice, whether it's to a young guy that wants to be a service manager, or whether it's a young equipment sales guy, or even just a young person in the industry trying to figure out what the heck they want to do, 14, 15-year-old kid that listens to this, like what, and you've got kids, right? Like what would you tell people that are listening to this? If you could speak to, I don't know how many people listen to this, a couple thousand.
Yeah.
A few
thousand. I was going to say more than,
you know, what would Dave Wilson leave as a nugget of experienced information?
You know, I think for, I guess what I would tell someone, especially to your point of that, maybe someone doesn't know what they want to do or a direction they want to go. And I think that's more and more common for youngsters these days. You know, fortunately, I was never cursed with that issue. I always was very driven. But, you know, for some of the folks that maybe don't quite know what they want to do, I think at the end of the day, what solves that is nobody's ever going to outwork me. Mm-hmm. I'll get up earlier. I'll stay later. I'll work faster. I'll work smarter. And, you know, but you know what? When I want to knock off at 3 o'clock and do something on Friday with my kids, sure. God darn it, I'm going to do it. Yeah. And I'm not going to ask for permission, because I know we don't need to, because I already put in more than most folks have in the last 2 weeks. Okay.
I love it.
I don't want to put that time in all my life.
Right.
Okay. But nobody's going to outwork me. I'm going to work faster. I'm going to work harder. You look at me here, right? I'm wearing work boots and jeans. Okay. I get out in the shop. I get dirty. And even if you don't know what you want to do long term, find a thing and do it to excellence.
Yeah. Right.
Whether you're mowing grass, laying brick, laying plumbing, wiring in a house, or at working in an office, or being an accountant, or a massage therapist, or cutting hair, or doing nails at the salon, I don't care what you are, be the best at that. And when leaders recognize excellence.
Oh, yeah.
And people who are performing to excellence that don't advertise it are the ones that get advertised the most.
We literally just talked about this with one of our young, kids.
This could be the theme of like this like season.
It's like aggressive patience, or like, you know, I said earlier, it's like being a patient savage, where you are so good at your job that you don't have to go tell everyone how good you are.
Yeah.
People can see it.
The guys who are, you know, early on in their career and they've been with us for a year and they're like, when am I going to be in a truck? When am I going to be this? When am I going to be that? Or the guy who's new and he's like, when am I going to be manager A and manager B? And I'm like, whoa, bud, like, you haven't even mastered the job you're in. Okay. So why don't you just work on being the best version of you can be in the job you're in. And trust me, when you've done that, I'll be coming to you.
Yeah.
You don't need to come to me. Because trust me, I got my eye on things.
Yeah, okay? Exactly.
You just be the best version of you. Give me no choice so that when there is the next opportunity, I can pick nobody but you. And when you do that, your future's open.
Yeah.
That's so true.
So that's my worship.
That's great. I mean, this has been awesome. I love it. I love having
you. Thank you so much for having me.
We got to do this again. You're not far away.
I love it.
It's great. Oh, there's so many nuggets here. I'm ending all of our podcasts now, Dave, with this, and I think you will appreciate this. If you like the podcast, send it to someone you like. If you loved it, send it to someone you love. If you hated it, send it to someone you hate.
All right, okay? There we go.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks. See you.
This is Turner Mining Live. This is Turner Mining Live.